This is Adam Elmachias, and you are listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 17. Turns out, maybe you can shoot a drone out of the sky. In this episode, a Kentucky man is cleared of all charges after downing a drone. Listener Nikki from NYC is having Lightroom issues, and Adobe's solution didn't really help. A photographer loses his marriage over his love of photography, and Canon may be working on a 5-layer image sensor. All that and more in episode 17 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Adam, for opening the show. I really appreciate it. Adam is an amazing concert photographer and so much more. If you want to check out his work, head on over to adamelmachias.com to see what I'm talking about. That's adamelmachias.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 17 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. All right, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Now, you may remember that back in July of 2015, William H. Meredith of Hillview, Kentucky, was arrested after shooting down a drone flying over his property, which he felt was invading his privacy. And at the time, I thought it was crazy to shoot down the drone, and I still think it is. I think that, you know, if you're worried about your privacy, go inside your house. Don't discharge a firearm in whatever town you're in. Maybe if you're out in the middle of nowhere. But there are options available for, you know, protecting your privacy. Go inside your house. Maybe call the police. If there's a drone outside that's keeping an eye on you, that might be a good thing to do. Not just get your shotgun out and blast it out of the sky. Who wants to deal with that, first of all? But he thought it was appropriate. Well, the 47-year-old man who downed the drone was cleared of all charges after a judge ruled that the camera's drone flight was indeed an invasion of his privacy. As you might imagine, though, the drone's owner was not at all happy about this verdict, and he's looking to appeal this decision. David Boggs was flying his DJI Phantom 3 camera drone for the first time that day when he says it was shot down at about 200 feet above Meredith's property. He tells the website Ars Technica that Judge Rebecca Ward ignored evidence of his drone's true flight path and instead relied on the testimony of three witnesses. Presumably witnesses that were neighbors of Meredith, I'm thinking, right? So maybe, I don't know, maybe they've known each other for years. Just saying. Two of those witnesses say that they saw the drone flying below the tree line, and those trees were not quite 200 feet high, of course. The judge said, quote, "I think it's credible testimony that his drone was hovering for two or three times over these people's property, that it was an invasion of their privacy, and that they had the right to shoot this drone. I'm going to dismiss his charge," end quote. Boggs says that he's looking to get this case taken before a grand jury, and he's also considering a civil suit against Meredith. Remember, hundreds of dollars worth of damage were done to his drone, so obviously he's looking to get some of that money back. But it costs money for lawyers, so maybe that's not exactly a good investment here. We'll keep you all posted if we hear anything else further on this story. And don't worry, I'm sure there's going to be other stories about people shooting drones out of the sky. That's always fun. And like I said in a previous episode, how come no one has thrown a net at a drone yet? I guess most people don't have nets readily available to them. I want a drone versus net story to do. That would be really cool. Maybe that's just me. You might also be interested to know that there's a new, quote, drone harassment bill, end quote, which will be making its way through the Kentucky State Legislature in 2016. It would make it illegal to hover over or land on someone's property with a drone, or to use the drone in a way that causes alarm or seriously annoys someone while serving no legitimate purpose. So that's interesting. You can't annoy someone with a drone. Well, then why are you buying a drone then? It's obvious that we're going to be seeing more and more drone laws going forward. There's no doubt. As these things become more and more popular and they're selling them like crazy, you're going to see more drone laws. And eventually, I think what people are going to have to do is fly their drones in designated areas, just like model airplane pilots do. You're not going to be able to fly these things in your backyard because your neighbors are going to be worried that you're spying on them. So there's that. You would think that you could fly them in a public park, but we recently did a story about a guy who was harassed by the father of a young female soccer player. The father overreacted and thought that this guy was spying on his daughter and the other girls who were really, really tiny. you know, with a mostly wide-angle camera in a drone from a couple hundred feet away, even 100 feet away, everyone is tiny. What did he think that he was going to actually do with this footage? That just boggles my mind. I think it says more about the dad than it does about the drone owner. So things are getting crazy out there. If you were considering a purchase of a drone, maybe you want to reconsider it. It's just not as fun as it once was. Why spend $1,000 when you can't fly it where you want to? Crazy. Listener Nikki from Nikki Digital in New York City hit me up on Twitter this week with Adobe's solution for the slowness he was experiencing in Lightroom. Their solution? Set the camera raw cache to a ginormous number. Which is all fine and good if you have the hard drive space available, but it seems like most people tend to run fairly full on their hard drives, even with hard drives being as cheap as they are these days. Nikki does a lot of event work there in New York City, so his catalog has pretty close to 300,000 photos in it. And so he consulted with Lightroom tech support, and what they had him do was increase the cache size from 4 GB to 50 GB, and then on up to 70 GB. And it seemed like that worked at first, but then he tweeted me with this, quote, "Ugh, the plot thickens. I'm back to snail speeds, and I didn't change anything in Lightroom," end quote. So it temporarily worked, and then all of a sudden he's back to snail speeds again. I say it's turtle slow. He says it's snail slow. I wonder which is actually slower, a turtle or a snail. I'm going to have to Google that. I've never wondered that before. Turtle or a snail. I'm thinking probably a snail. So he's getting even slower speeds than I'm getting. You know, I said it before. I say it in this podcast episode. Eventually, Adobe will have to rewrite Lightroom. They just have to. It has clearly become bloated. So if you're on Twitter, maybe hashtag rewrite Lightroom to @Lightroom. And let's see if we can make this thing happen. Let's at least get their attention. In the meantime, though, try what Adobe Tech Support said for Lightroom. Go to your preferences window, click on the file handling tab, and then enter a new value, a much larger value, depending on the hard drive space you have, of course, in the camera raw cache settings. Adobe also recommends that if you have a solid state drive, also known as an SSD, that can help as well. But I've got a 5K Retina iMac, and I can tell you that really hasn't changed a whole lot. Imagine how much slower it would be for me on a regular spinning hard drive than an SSD. So yeah, you know, when people are complaining about slowness in Lightroom, when it used to be much faster, there is a problem. And there's other alternatives out there, and maybe we're going to have to go to them. This is a huge problem for Adobe. They have not had a good year with Lightroom, and people are noticing and being more vocal, like we are here on the podcast, about how slow it is, and it's time to rewrite it. Let's make that happen, guys. Arguably, one of the most famous photographers of our day is Brandon Stanton of Humans of New York. With 15-plus million followers on Facebook and 4-plus million on Instagram, Stanton's following speaks to how much this project has really resonated with people around the world. His portraits and interviews of strangers have become a global phenomenon, and both of his books have now become New York Times bestsellers. In an interview he did with NPR, he said, quote, "I was working in finance in Chicago, and I lost my job. I just kind of made the decision that I was going to spend the next period of my life thinking not about money, but about how I spent my time. I loved taking photographs at the time, and I struck upon this kind of crazy idea that I was going to go to New York and stop 10,000 people on the streets and take their portrait and create a kind of photographic census of the city," end quote. It's quite a success story, and it's often compelling. If you're interested in his work, have a look over at Facebook, Instagram, or maybe check out one of his New York Times best-selling books. As you may recall, support for RAW was added to Android phones last year. And that still amazes me. RAW on phones. Well, now Google has rolled out a new version of the Snapseed app for Android, which allows for RAW editing of DNG photos or other RAW photos which have been converted to DNG. So now users will be able to recover blown highlights and dark shadows much as they would on their computers, so that's pretty cool. And if you think about it, this makes a lot of sense, of course. Many people are using their tablets and the larger phones for their photography and for editing, and being able to work with the RAW file is huge. A new develop tool in Snapseed will allow users to adjust exposure, contrast, white balance, saturation, shadows, highlights, and structure. Google tells us, quote, "The develop tool integrates seamlessly with Snapseed's other tools and filters to provide a comprehensive photo editing suite," end quote. You know, it really amazes me what we can do on mobile devices these days. Imagine what we're going to have in just 5 years' time. That is just craziness. If you want to check out Snapseed version 2.1, it's available right now in the Google Play Store, so maybe give it a try. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while now, you've heard me do stories about people getting killed while doing photo shoots on train tracks. It is so incredibly foolish, and yet people still do them. And you know what? People aren't getting caught on train tracks, as in their shoe gets caught like you might see on TV and in the movies. They just can't hear or see the trains coming, apparently, until it's too late, and then they're dead. You know, they're focusing on taking pictures, so they're not seeing the train coming. They might even see it, and it might not register to them that, oh, that's coming towards me. But at least with the sound, you would think that a very loud, very large train approaching would be something that you would hear. And yet people aren't hearing them. This isn't something that's unique to the United States either. It's happening all over the world. Well, Network Rail, the company which operates most of the rail network in England, Scotland, and Wales, has released surveillance video showing many incidents at a single rail crossing in Derbyshire, and all in just one day. The video shows parents photographing their children sitting on the tracks. Those are great parents, huh? People taking selfies, and a group of 10 who lingered on the tracks for a full 8 minutes as they posed for photos. In the United Kingdom, there are approximately 6,100 of the so-called level crossings, where people are able to walk across the tracks in designated spots. Now, 900 of them have been closed in the past 5 years, and the company says that, quote, "If the railway was being built now, level crossings would not be used," end quote. Apparently, when they were built, there were far fewer trains, and they were much, much slower, so the danger to the public was minimal. But now, with people stopping to take photos on them and not paying attention, bad things happen. So I say just stop taking pictures on train tracks. It's not original, it's not safe, and it's not worth your life. So as you may remember, back in September 2015, Canon announced that it's developing a new ultra-high-resolution DSLR sensor with crazy high megapixel count. We're talking 120 megapixels. That is a lot of megapixels. And yeah, imagine the processing power and disk space that you'll need for that. That's just crazy. Anyhow, according to Canon Watch, they're hearing from a reliable source that the 120 megapixel sensor uses a newer technology rather than the typical bare design to get past that 100 megapixel mark. This new design may be multi-layered like the Foveon sensor in Sigma cameras, where it's a stacked design allowing for light to pass through, collecting the red, green, and blue light separately. So back in 2013, there were rumors that Canon was planning a 75-plus megapixel DSLR with a three-layer stacked sensor. Then the very next year, that's 2014 of course, the company patented a five-layer design which goes beyond the Foveon sensor to capture the regular light spectrum, as well as ultraviolet and infrared light as well. So it wouldn't be a stretch to put two and two together and get five. As in, this five-layer sensor may very well be what's coming in that 120 megapixel DSLR, which is said to be out sometime in 2018. Now, I know we're almost to 2016, but 2018 sounds way far in the future. Just wait till we get to 2020. That's going to be insane. I remember growing up as a kid, the year 2000 seemed like way in the future, and now that's 15 years in the rearview mirror. That is just blows my mind. And hopefully by 2018, when this camera might be out with this 120 megapixel sensor in it, hopefully we'll all have computers that can crunch through the massive files with ease, and hard drives will be way cheaper than they are now, which is still pretty cheap, and we can actually deal with files at large. And if Santa really exists, he'll bring us a complete rewrite of Adobe Photoshop Lightroom so we can actually work with those huge photos. It can't even handle the 24 megapixel images that I throw at it now. Imagine files that are nearly five times that size. That's crazy. Do you hear me, Adobe? For Christmas, I want a Lightroom rewrite. Maybe I should specify a Christmas though, huh? That's too open-ended. Now this Christmas 2015 isn't likely to happen, and Christmas 2017 seems like too long to wait. 2016, though, that's still over, let's see, November, December. That's 16, what is that? 14? I can't do math today. That's 14 months away. Crazy. I don't think so. Myself and many others may have jumped ship by then. So maybe they can make this happen by Easter 2016. That's not too bad. Maybe the Easter Bunny will actually bring me a complete rewrite of Lightroom. One that actually moves through the photos without making me wait. That would be very nice. If 120 megapixel cameras are coming, they need to do something. Imagine how Lightroom is going to deal with 120 megapixel files. So we're still talking a couple years away for that. But in the meantime, turtle slow Adobe Photoshop Lightroom. I love it, but it is too darn slow. So now's the time to make something happen. I should only have time to change my mind on edits between photos, not have time to make a sandwich, because that's a little bit too long. So maybe let's get with that, guys. Come on. Photography is mostly harmless. Mostly. But if it causes you to get divorced and it affects your children, maybe you have your priorities out of whack. And that appears to have been the case for one photographer. Apple Daily in Taiwan reports that a woman there recently filed for divorce, citing her husband's obsession with photography as one of the main factors. The woman accused him of focusing so much on his photography that he lacked empathy towards his family and his friends. In one instance, the couple took their baby son to the hospital for vaccinations, and the husband allegedly asked the doctor to give the baby a second shot so he can get a better shot. All right, that is just messed up. I mean, what if the doctor went ahead and gave him a second shot? Probably not a good thing. Don't be doing things like that. Just concentrate on your child, not the photography so much. Take pictures, maybe, but don't be setting up shots. Not cool. Now, another time, they awoke to their son crying at 2 o'clock in the morning. Rather than taking care of him, though, the husband insisted on getting his camera and tripod out to take pictures of his crying son. I guess his first thought was, hey, my kid's crying. I gotta take pictures of this. This might not happen again. Yeah, right. The kid's gonna be crying like for years. What a horrible father. He thinks first about photographic opportunities rather than taking care of his children. You know, wanting to get a better shot of the vaccination is one thing, but this one's just a little too far over the top. And they all are, but this one takes it. Just take care of your kid and forget about the photography for once. Come on. Now, it would appear that this guy enjoyed photography more than he did being married, because this didn't end very well for him. The wife asked for about $3,900 US in child support, but the judge ruled that they each contributed to the deterioration of their marriage, and they'll each be contributing roughly $2,000 a month. So while not the only factor, this guy's love of photography messed with the love of his wife and his children, and I think at the end of the day, hopefully, he would say it wasn't worth it. While not available in Photoshop, Lightroom, and other popular image editing apps just yet, if you're a Mac user running OS X El Capitan, you might be interested to know that with that OS update, you've got 10-bit color available, with the correct Mac, of course. Right now, it only works within Preview and Photos in OS X, but there should be support for the more popular image editors pretty soon. Seeing images in 10-bit color means being able to see over a billion colors rather than the 16.8 million of 8-bit. You know, the difference between those two is a whole lot. It's so much that is practically a rounding error. So you're going to be able to see a whole lot more colors there. Now, this won't be possible in all Macs, of course, but you're going to need either a 4K or 5K Retina iMac or a newer Mac Pro with the appropriate monitor alongside Mac OS X El Capitan. But with the right combination, you're going to be able to see even more colors thanks to the 10-bit color drivers in that update. This is not going to set the world on fire by any means, but if you do a lot of photo editing, this is definitely going to be something that you're going to enjoy. In episode 16, we talked about Boomerang by Instagram. Well, now popular photo filter maker Visco, that's VSCO, has launched Disco, that's right, DSCO, a new app for creating and sharing animated GIFs of your life's moments. Now, I know a lot of people out there are like, hey, Sharky, it's GIF, not GIF. But guess what? As it turns out, it's GIF. Now, personally, I hate calling it GIF. It reminds me of the peanut butter. It actually is GIF, not GIF. And the reason why is the people that created the format say that's what it is, and they get to name it. I don't make the rules. Now, JPEG is JPEG, so we're good there. All right, so let's move on. So how Disco works is you press a button, you capture a few seconds of life, you edit the GIF, I still want to say GIF, with the Visco filters, then you share either through Visco or through various other social networks. And as with Boomerang and other apps, people are going to be using this to promote their photography business or for other creative uses. So I think in that respect, it's worth having a look. You don't have to use it if you don't like it, but if you can figure out a way to use it for your business, make more money, engage your audience better, I think that's a good thing to do. If this sort of thing interests you, head on over to the App Store and look for Disco. That's DSCO. First came GoPro, and they defined action cams. Then came DJI, who defined drones. Well, now they're getting into each other's markets, and that makes a lot of sense if you think about it. Now, while we're going to have to wait until sometime in the first half of 2016 for GoPro's drone, they've just published a teaser video showing the capabilities of the developmental prototype they're working on. The video is ridiculously smooth, and they make a point of mentioning that no post-processing was done on the footage. So that is pretty cool. You might remember the early drone footage was all shaky, and it was cool seeing things from way up high, a couple hundred feet or so. But you had to stabilize the footage, and when you do that, you lose some resolution. So now you've got these drones and these camera combinations with these amazing gimbals on them that almost completely get rid of the shake, and you've got super, super smooth motion. That is just amazing. That's why people are buying these like crazy. I tell you, we have some amazing technology that's available to us. Some of it's really expensive. But then again, we're spending thousands on our cameras and lenses. A $1,000 drone, really not that out of the question if you're into this sort of thing. The footage in this video was shot with a GoPro Hero 4 camera at 1440p resolution, and it looks like their upcoming drone could be a solid alternative to DJI's offerings. But we'll see, they haven't been announced yet. But what GoPro has announced is their Q3 2015 earnings. And while international revenue tripled, that's good, right? Sales in the Americas fell by 7%. And as a result, GoPro's stock price plummeted by over 16% to an all-time low for the company. This is a growing market, and people are making a whole lot of money in it. And GoPro seems to really need that now. You know, part of the problem might be that everybody who wants a GoPro already has one. So they're expanding into the camera drone market where growth is going to be just crazy. It seems like it's just growing by leaps and bounds. So it seems like GoPro needs to get these drones out there quickly and start selling a bunch of them. A 16% drop in their stock price. That is not good. That is a lot of money. That's millions of dollars lost right there. So we'll see. We'll keep you guys posted here. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 17 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the podcast, or you can call us at area code 206-333-9308. Now, if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm at LensShark. That's L-E-N-S. S-H-A-R-K. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 18. Well, it's F8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.